Next week's parsha is Parsha Bamidbar, and we will start from the end of the parsha. And it's really, really towards the end of the parsha. This would be Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Zayin, chapter 4, verse 17. Now, at this point of the parsha, the Torah goes through what the Jewish people are to do when the Mishkan is going to travel, and how the different families of the tribe of Levi have their specific appointments and specific jobs and specific parts of the Mishnah of the Mishkan that they carry, and the family of Kehas, there were three families of the tribe of Levi, Gershe, Kehas, and Merari. And the family of Kehas carried the articles of the Mishkan, being the Arin, the Shulchan, the table, the menorah, the candelabra, the Mizbeach, the altar. That was what they carried. So Pasuk Yud Zayin reads, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe v'al Aaron leimar, and Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Al tachrisu es shevet mishpachais ha-kahasi. Do not cause the tribe of the family of Kehas to be cut off, mitayach halavim, from amongst the Levim. Zvezois asulahem, this is what you should do for them. V'chayu v'lo yamusu, they shall live and not die. Begishtem es kedesh hakadoshim, when they approach the Holy of Holies. Aaron uvanav yavayu, Aaron and his sons shall come. V'samu aysam ish ish alavadasei v'masai, and they will come and put each person by his work and by what he is to carry. They shall not come to see when the holy is covered up, and they shall die. So what's happening here is that Hashem is telling Moshe that instead of the Levim all on their own going and deciding, basically having it a free-for-all to run and see who's going to go ahead and take which, who's going to carry which article, it's going to be Aaron and his sons are going to take each Levi, and they are going to put each Levi where they belong, what job they should be doing, what they should be carrying. And the Torah says the reason that they're doing this is so that they shall not come to see while the holy articles are being covered. Meaning, the Torah says before that the articles, the Aaron and such, before they are going to be carried when they're traveling, these articles are covered up.
But the English here says inserted. What?
They're covered. They're inserted in the cover.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. They're covered up, and the psukim are saying that, seem to be saying, at least the way I understand it, is that if you have this free for all, where the Levium are just coming and taking a spot and grabbing a spot, they may do that basically in their rush or whatever reason that they're coming to do it. They're coming to do it on their own. They may come to do it before everything is covered up, and that would be inappropriate. And therefore, by having Aaron and his sons be the one to appoint each person at his spot, so now there'll be no rush or no reason for them to come on their own, and therefore the articles of the Mishkan will be covered before they come, and everybody will be okay. So from the Pesukim itself, it implies that what's causing them to die was the fact that they were coming to carry the articles before they were covered. So I want to share with you the way the Medrash explains the problem that was going on here. Well, they're following orders. It was like basically anybody. It was first come, first serve. You came and took what you wanted. So when there was nobody basically putting you on your spot, you came when you wanted.
Only
the
Levites.
This is only referring to the Levites because they're the only ones who carried it. So the Sephardim says, and we'll see such an opinion of the Medrash, that they were actually going to come there early because, you know, it was first come, first serve, and certain people wanted to carry certain things. So they came early on their own, but they came before it was covered. Now they're not going to come early because they're only going to get their spot when Aaron and his sons appoint them. So let me share with you how the Medrash adds to what's going on here. And the Medrash begins with a pasuk that we say every Shabbos morning. The pasuk says, this is after, on Shabbos morning, after we say, Hodu, Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Kel Mechastei, the whole list. So we have the chapter of Tehillim that begins, Ranu Tzadikim Ba'Hashem, righteous, you should sing joyfully to Hashem. And towards the end, there is a pasuk, there are psukim, Hine Ein Hashem El Yireyav, behold, the eye of God is to those who fear Him, Lam Yachalim Lachaste, to those who hope to for His kindness, La'atzir M'mavas Nafsham, to save their souls from death, U'lachayayisam Bara'av, and to sustain them in famine. That's the pasuk. Again, the pasuk says, Hashem's eyes to those who fear Him, to those who hope for His kindness, to save their souls from death, and to sustain them in famine. Says the Medrash, Hine Ein Hashem El Yireyav Zeshivtei Shaledi. When the pasuk says, the eye of God is to those who fear Him, who is that referring? Who are those who fear Him? Who is that referring to? The tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi are called the ones who fear Hashem, who hope for His kindness. Shem Yeshvim Umekavim Lachaste Shalom Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Leviim are in a constant state of hoping for God's mercy, God's kindness. V'chikol Abrias Eidem Yachlan Lachaste Shalom Kadosh Baruch Hu. Is the tribe of Levi the only ones who hope for Hashem's kindness? Ela B'Yoser Shiftei Shalevi. Especially the tribe of Levi. They especially hope for Hashem's kindness. Why? Shalom Chelek Be'eretz. They didn't take a portion of the land. They don't have their own portion of land. But rather they sit and they pray that the land of Israel should produce its fruits, so that they'll be able to take their tithes from the fruits and be sustained. All they have is the kindness of Hashem, and therefore they are hoping for His kindness. Then the psukim continue to save their souls from death. They are hoping that God protects them from death. The pasuk says, "Lahatzel mimaves nafsham," to save their souls from death, "Lachayesem barav," and to sustain them in famine. So the Medrash then asks, "Okay, what kind of death are we talking about here?" When it says that those who fear God, who are talking about the tribe of Levi, they're hoping for the kindness of God to save them from death. What kind of death are we talking about? Amr Belezer ben Padas, the sage Rebbe ben Padas said, "Meize misa yunitzolim." What kind of death are they seeking to be saved from? Imimisa shalaylam. If we're talking about general death, haray ein beria shein mesa, ein bria shein mesa. Everybody's got to go sometime. So ma'ar lahatzel mimaves nafsham, what does it mean to save their souls from death? Ela mimisas ha'arin. But it means the death that came through the arin, through the ark. There was a death that came by through the ark, and that is what the Leviim were hoping that Hashem would save them from. Ketzad, what was the death of the ark? Omer Belezer ben Padas, said the sage Belezer ben Padas, b'shem Reb Yesi ben Zimra, when the Jewish people were traveling, and the Torah tells us, as will be depicted later on, it was the Aron that went first. Who went in front of them? It was the Aron. Two sparks of fire would emanate from between the two poles of the ark, in order to knock off any of their enemies. Uminayan Shekain, how do we know this is so? Moshe Omer Yisrael, Moshe said to the Jewish people, why are you afraid of the giants of Canaan? Don't you know that the ark, anytime it went in front of us, it was knocking off all our enemies? The same way we were saved from our enemies through the ark, we'll be saved when we go into Eretz Yisrael. So the Medrash is saying that you had the ark, right? It had two poles that was carried by, and from between these two poles, meaning from the ark, would come out these two sparks of fire, and it would take care of any enemies that were coming to attack the Jewish people. A very interesting piece of information. Now, it continues that the kevasher nitzaitzin yaitzin, once these sparks, these flames, would come out, ha'isra'esh safa b'tayanei ha'arin, the fire would grab hold of those carrying the ark, v'nisrafan mismatin, they'd get burned, And that would decrease the population of the family of Kehas. Very interesting. They're holding the ark, right? They're carrying the ark, which is what they're supposed to do. But when these two sparks of fire come out to destroy the enemy, they burn those who are carrying the Aron. And therefore it was diminishing the population of the tribe of Kehas. Then the Medrash shows, it goes through this whole calculation to show that the tribe of Kehas, when the Torah talks about the numbers of the families of Levi, and there is a counting from a month to 30, and then from 30 up, meaning for those who count, for those who are going to be doing the work of carrying the articles of the Mishkan. So the Medrash points out, there's a very sharp decrease in the family of Kehas from the age of 30 and up, which is the age of when they're starting to carry the articles of the Mishkan. There's a recognizable decrease, and the reason for that all is because of the fact that mitoich shehoisei shiyotza v'safa b'tayinei ha'aron hayim ismatin. Because when the fire would come out, it would burn those who were carrying it, and they would be diminished. Now, I didn't see an explanation as to, you know, what were they doing wrong? What did they do wrong? I mean, their job was to carry the aron, and they're getting burned. Why would they be suffering here? Why would they be seemingly punished for something? Well, maybe as we read a little bit later, it'll become a little clearer. However, it is very possible that if a person was handling the ark, who's handling the Aron, is for some reason, while he's holding the holiest of articles, for some reason not behaving appropriately at that point of time, perhaps his focus is not where it should be, his intentions are not where it should be, for some reason he is not living up to what it means to be someone who can carry the ark. Well, when a situation comes that the ark is shooting out fire and it's punishing those who are evil, it's a time, meaning which is the enemies coming to attack the Jewish people, it's considered a time of punishment, a time of judgment, and those who are now in that vicinity get judged also. And therefore, those carrying the ark, if they're not living up to the standard of what it means to be a bearer of the ark, then they're punished when that fire comes out. But it was clearly creating a problem, because the people were basically, it was up to everyone to decide to go and take which article to carry. And those who landed up going to have the merit, the privilege seemingly, of carrying the ark, many of them, at least, were dying from doing so. So what was the result of that? V'hayu kol echad ve'echad rotzen. And everybody was running. Everybody, when it was time to take an article, everybody ran. Zeh noitelas ha-shulchan. One guy ran to take the table. Zeh noitelas ha-menorah. The other one ran to carry the candelabra, the menorah. Zeh noitelas ha-mizbechais. And this one runs to take the arks. Ubarchim and aron. But nobody wants to take the aron. No one wants to take the ark. B'mnei shayim azikan. Because it was hurting them. It was diminishing them. It was damaging them. That was very disrespectful to the ark. Everybody's running away. No one wants to take the ark. Everybody's running to take a different article, and no one wants to take the ark. And that brought an anger of Hashem upon them. And that was also causing them to be diminished. It's like, you know, either way, you carry the ark, it can be trouble. You run away from the ark, that also causes trouble. Omar Kadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe. Mani harig b'nei Kehas? What am I going to do? I'm going to kill out the family of Kehas? Imita nu are mismatin. If they carry, they get diminished. V'mlo yitinu. And if they don't carry because they don't want to carry it, harei kas aleim. So now we get angry. Now I get angry at them, says Hashem. So amalei kadosh baruch hu l'moshe la'aron. So kadosh baruch hu said to Moshe and to Aaron, asu lehem tachar lo b'nei Kehas. Kadei shal yikarsim min ha'olam. You know, help them out here. Do something for them that they shouldn't be cut off from the world. So that they shouldn't leave and run away from carrying the ark. Don't allow the tribe of Kehas to be cut off. Let Aaron and his sons come. And Aaron and his sons will put each person where he should be, so that they shouldn't basically be switching or going ahead and taking a different job than they should. So my understanding here is that what Aaron and his sons are going to do is, either it means, in the very least, they should prevent Hashem getting angry at them for running away from the Aaron. And basically, when Aaron and Budav say, who's where, that's where you got to go. And you can't go anywhere else, number one. And number two, I would assume that Aaron and his sons, when they decided who's going to carry what, they were able to figure out who is the most appropriate to carry what. And therefore, that too would hopefully prevent any calamity, any tragedy caused by carrying the ark. Because they would put the person, the people they would choose for carrying the ark would be those who are most fit. At the same time, if they didn't want to do it, it really wasn't up to them. So, in the very least, in according to this approach of the Medrash, the point of having Aaron and his sons put each Levi of the family of Kohath by his job was to make sure that they wouldn't abandon the ark, which would cause Hashem's anger to be upon them, at least that much. And perhaps also, Aaron and his sons would have to have a reason who they would put by what. And we can assume that Aaron and his sons would put those to carry the ark, those who are most worthy of doing so, which would also decrease the possibilities of those people dying from carrying the ark.
But at different times, they carry the ark only when they moved, right?
It's the only time.
So sometimes people, have they been 2 years at a place, 6 months? I mean, how did they know how long they're staying?
No, they didn't. It was all up to the cloud, the clouds of glory. When the cloud, what the Torah says later on about Leischa, there was a cloud that rested on the Mishkan. When it would lift, when it would go up, they knew to get ready, and once they would go, they'd follow the cloud.
But some of there's up to 2 years. They were.
It depends. At different places, different places.
They were happy not to see the cloud.
But the point is that here the discussion is that once they were traveling, the Leviim had their job to carry a different article, and now the Torah and Hashem told to Moshe that Aaron and his sons will be the ones to put each person to which job they're supposed to do. Meaning no more free for all. Now it's basically Aaron and his sons appoint each person to their position. This is the first approach of the Mishnah, of the Medrash. The Medrash first approach is that Hashem is telling Moshe, do not allow the family of Kohath to be cut off, because the tribe of Kohath, the Leviim of the family of Kohath did not want to carry the ark, and therefore Moshe told Aaron and his sons to appoint. They're the ones who now put each Levi by what they're supposed to carry. Now the Medrash continues. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmeni Omar Chas v'Shalom. V'hayu b'nei Kohath manichen es ha'aron v'asher shulchan menorah. Now, the b'nei Kohath would never do such a thing. Abandon the ark to run for the shulchan and the menorah. Ela af al pi shem esmatin, even though carrying the ark would cause them to be diminished, hayu noistim nafshem al ha'aron. They were ready to put their lives on the line for the sake of carrying the Aaron. Meaning, from this part of the Medrash, we see that, again, this issue about the Aaron causing death to those who carried it, it continued. It continued, and they were still ready to do it. The Im came. Lama yamazer aleihem atachrisu ashevet. So why warn them? What was the point of the warning? Don't allow the tribe of Kohath to be cut off. Elam ipnei. Show you yoidin. But rather, they knew. Shomi shatayin ba'arin, whoever carries the arin, schari meruba. You know, there's risk and there's benefit. If those who carry the arin have the most reward. I didn't see what that reward means. Does that reward mean in Eilam Haba, in the afterlife? Does it mean if they survive it, there's some kind of great reward that comes for carrying the arin? But the point was they knew that the arin had the most reward. It was the most important thing to carry and the greatest privilege to carry. And they didn't bother. No one wanted to do the other parts. They didn't want to do the table. They didn't want to do the altar. They didn't want to do the menorah. Everybody was running to the Aaron to be able to get the most reward. What's the matter?
So these are two opinions in the same Midrash?
Two opinions in the same Midrash, but arguing.
Right, okay.
Arguing.
Sure, yeah.
Right. Now, if everybody is now running for the same thing, okay, now again, you're talking about you had four people carrying the Aaron. So, whoever would get there first, they'd start arguing, and they would say, I'm carrying over here. And the other one would say, no, I'm carrying over here. When you start fighting over where to stand, that is not that does not lead to seriousness. That leads to a certain calistration, means frivolity, but it means, you know, inappropriate behavior. Not serious, not appropriately, not serious behavior. And when it would come to that point, right, here you are acting inappropriately around the Aaron, that's a cause to be punished. So Hashem said to Moshe, Asei lahem takana. Do something for them. Make sure that you don't get cut off. Aaron and his sons, they will arrange who does what so that there should be no fights. Again, they were fighting. They're fighting who's going to get the Aaron. I want to carry the Aaron. I want to carry the Aaron. It sounds like from before, even though he's carrying the Aaron, they would fight where to stand, who's going to carry, who's going to stand to which part. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, tell Aaron and his sons, put everybody in their place so that there should be no inappropriate behavior and they shouldn't be in that, and that shouldn't cause their death. So the Medrash here gives us a very interesting insight into what was going on here and as to why Hashem said to Moshe to tell Aaron, you know, al tachrisu, you know, don't allow the tribe of Kohath to be cut off. According to the first opinion, they were cut off, meaning they were being killed, because carrying the Aaron itself was such a serious thing that when those two fires would come out, which doesn't seem like there's no argument about that. Seems from the Medrash, everybody agrees. When the Aaron would be ahead of the Jewish people, it would basically, anybody who came to attack them would be destroyed through these two fires that would come out of the Aaron. But those two fires that came out of the Aaron were actually killing the Kohanim that were carrying them. It's according to the first opinion, because of that, nobody wanted the Aaron, nobody wanted the Ark. And therefore, Moshe told Aaron his sons, it's no more free for all, and therefore the chance of people, nobody wanting to take the Ark, leaving the Ark abandoned. The Aaron and his sons, they will put each person where they have to be. So therefore now the Ark won't be left abandoned. According to the other opinion, the Kohanim were never running away from the Aaron, as dangerous as they may have been. But rather, not the Kohanim, the Levim weren't fighting over the Ark, weren't abandoning the Aaron as dangerous as it was. But rather, they're all fighting over the Aaron because of the great reward that was in store for those who carry the Aaron. And they didn't want to carry anything else. And they were fighting over the Aaron, which was inappropriate behavior around the Aaron, and that was causing them to be punished by death. And therefore, Aaron and his sons would tell each lady where they should be, and therefore there would be no quarreling, no fighting. Okay. Now, related to this, I want to share with you a very interesting chapter in Maseilas Yesharim. Maseilas Yesharim, the famous Musar work, written by Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, and he has a section called Midas Chasidus, the trait of Chasidus. In this context, Chasidus means to go beyond the letter of the law. And as the Maseilas Yesharim explains, you know, we know what we're obligated to do, right? We have our laws, and we have all the details of what we're obligated to do. So there's one person who says, I'm going to do what I have to do, and that's it. And another person, out of love of Hashem, says, I do what I have to do, and I'm going to go beyond that. Because every mitzvah really reveals to me what the will of Hashem is, what Hashem wants from us. And therefore, I'm not just going to do what He commanded me to do, I'm going to do whatever I see is the will of Hashem that is revealed through the mitzvah that He gives us. And therefore, you basically expand the performance of the mitzvah to carry it even further than what you're obligated. You carry it even further beyond the letter of the law because you know that this is what Hashem wants. A servant does what he's told to do. A child, out of love for a parent, does more than what the parent tells them to do. Out of love for their parent, they get an understanding from what their parent tells them to do, what their parent wants. And they do more than just what the parent tells them to do, what they're obligated to do. They do what they know the parent wants them to do, which is beyond, which will go beyond the letter of the law. So that's the Midas Chasidus. That's the trait of We'll call it piety in English. They call it piety. But it means the trait of going beyond the letter of the law in the performance of mitzvahs. So the Misalas Tesharim is dealing with a number of different spiritual levels. And he first explains the level, and then he also gets into, he actually defines the level, then he explains the different components of the level, and then he has something called, and he explains the different components of Chassidus, and then he has a chapter called B'mishkala Chassidus, weighing Chassidus, meaning how exactly, meaning when to, how to practice Chassidus, in the sense of when do you apply it, and maybe when don't you apply it. There are going to be different aspects of what the level of Chassidus tells us to do, what the level of Chassidus will have us doing, but you have to weigh it sometimes. You have to weigh and figure out, okay, which way should I go? Should I go beyond the letter of the law? Maybe I shouldn't go beyond the letter of the law. So says Misalas Tesharim. And what he's going to say here, and you'll see from his examples, will relate to going beyond the letter of the law. It will also go even regarding things we're obligated to do, but seeing the correct way of doing them. Mashetzarach levoyer ata, hu mishkala chassidus hazeh. Says Moshe Sesharim, we have to now explain how to weigh, how exactly to decide when to use the trait of chassidus. V'ini yikari ma'oid ma'oid. This is a very important principle. V'teida be'emes, and you should know, shezoyi ha'malacha ha'kasha shevechassidus. The hardest part of the level of Chassidus is this idea of weighing Chassidus, knowing when to use it and when not. Kidakusei Rav, it's very subtle. V'yesh l'yetzer b'davar hazeh kanisa gedayla, and the Yetzer Hara has access. This is really a place where the Yetzer Hara in how to apply and how to use Chassidus. The Yetzer Hara has a knisa gedola. He has a lot of access here. It allows him a lot of access. Al kenimtzes sakanasa yatsuma, and therefore, even the person who reaches high level of chassidus, he faces a very serious situation. Ki harbe devarim tayvim, because it could come out that many good things yuchal hayetzer l'rachei kilo heim royim. The Yetzer Hara will convince a person not to do it because, as if they are wrong. And there'll be many sins that the Yetzer Hara can make you think it's the right thing to do, all within the framework of this level of Chassidus. The only way to succeed in weighing the options properly is with three things. Shiyaliba yasher shavalovavis. His heart should be straight. It should be pure. What's your intention of what you're doing? Solely for the purpose of being a pleasure to Hashem and no other motive. That's number one. And whatever you do, you have to analyze what you're doing exceptionally well. And you make sure that these actions will eventually come out to get to this purpose, to truly fulfill the purpose of bringing pleasure to Hashem. V'achar kol zayis, and even after all that, after all your pureness of heart, your pureness of intent, and that you're going to analyze everything that you do with a fine comb. V'achar kol zayis, after all that, yamashnech yavel Hashem. You have to put your trust in Hashem that He's going to help you with this. She'az yomer boy. So then the pasuk will state about you, Ashri Adam Oizleibach. Fortunate is the man whose strength is in you. He does not hold back good for those who go with perfection. If you're missing any one of these things, meaning you are missing purity of intent, you're going to be somewhat lazy, or you're not going to analyze your actions properly, you're not going to put trust in Hashem, that is how you can find yourself in great danger within this level of chassidus, of going beyond the letter of the law. Now, so what do you got to do? What is it that you have to do? What a person needs to understand is, the main thing is, don't judge a matter of chassidus just based on first impressions. But you need to contemplate what will be the repercussions of what you're doing. Because there'll be a point, there'll be sometimes, there'll be a matter of chassidus. On the outside, it looks fine. You see it, you see the opportunity of performing it is there. It looks good, it looks fine. But because the repercussions of it will be bad, you gotta leave it. You have to abstain from it. If you do it, you won't be a pious individual, you'll be a sinner. Step number one is that you may see an opportunity to perform an act of chassidus. You're looking at it. Obviously, on the at first impression, it looks good, but you can't just act on the first impression. You have to stop and think, what will be the results? What will be the repercussions of what I'm about to do? Because it's possible that something that looks good at first, if you think about it, based on the situation at hand, the repercussions can be very bad. For example, we know that the day after Rosh Hashanah is a fast called Tzayim Gedalia. Gedalia ben Achikam was put in charge of governing Eretz Yisrael by the Nebuchadnezzar after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And the story of Gedalia ben Achikam is that there was a person who wanted to kill him. Gedalia ben Achikam was warned that this, I can't remember the whole, his name was Yishmael, I remember the more than that. His name was Yishmael, who wanted to kill him. Gedalia ben Achikam was told that Yishmael wants to kill him, and he wouldn't accept it. Wouldn't accept the Lashon Hara. Wouldn't accept it. And because of that, eventually this Yishmael did kill Gedalia ben Achikam. Hinei Maisa Gedalia ben Achikam, the story of Gedalia ben Achikam, from Yirmiyah, Perek Mem. Golu Leinenu, we all know it. Shemipnei Rav Chasidusai, because of his abundant piety. Shalai Ladin es Yishmael Lakav Chayva, he didn't want to judge Yishmael in an unfavorable manner. He didn't want to accept Lashon Hara. Meaning, if somebody tells you, someone said wants to kill you, right? Then the halacha is, it's not Lashon Hara. You beware. Do something about it. If somebody tells you that someone else wants to kill you, I don't know if you have permission to kill that person. But in the very least, you need to be on guard. And
can defend yourself.
Right. Because Gedalia ben Achikam, out of his piety, he wanted to go beyond, he was going beyond the letter of the law. He wouldn't accept such things about anyone. The person Yechem ben Kareach was warning him, Shekarat Tadeva Yishmael, what you're saying is false about Yishmael. You know, it was a doubt in his mind, and he wanted to go beyond the letter of the law and give him the benefit of the doubt and not judge him negatively. Uma Garam, what did that cause? Garam Shemes, who? It caused that he got killed. The Nifsru Yisrael. And the Jewish people, the remnant of the Jewish people, were chased out of Eretz Yisrael. The Kocha Gachaltam and Ashara. And the remaining ember of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael was extinguished. Ukvayichas HaKasav Elav. And the Torah already attributes to him, to Gedalia, Harikas HaNashma Shenergu. All the people that were killed because of this. Meaning, you kill the king of Babel's governor, appointed governor in Eretz Yisrael, that's an act of rebellion. Ke'ilu, and all the people that were killed due to this, Kilo Haragam, who? The Torah attributes it to Gedalia, as if Gedalia himself killed them. Uchamamar Mizal ala Pasik. As the sages said regarding the Pasik, Eis kol pigrei ha'anashim, all the dead bodies of the people, Ashahi kabiyad Gedalio, that were smitten through the hand of a Gedalio. That could mean because of Gedalia, because of what happened to Gedalia, but Chazal say it means more than that. It means he's responsible for it. V'abayis Hasheni got. Okay, so the first example that he gives is Gedalia ben Achikam.
But if he is considered to eventually cause so much trouble, why did they name a fast after him?
It's remembering. Well, first of all, he was a righteous person. But at the same time, it was that event that caused this continuation.
Or maybe other people have told that before.
Well, the point here is like this. The point is that the Misas Yesharim is giving his first example of what seems to be piety.
A piety.
And at first glance, you know, it's appropriate thing. You know, if you look, if you learn about giving something the benefit of the doubt, it is appropriate, very appropriate, to give anyone the benefit of the doubt. And he did that. But he should have thought about it. He should have thought, what are the repercussions? If the end of the day is that this Yeshua wants to kill him, and he does kill him, it's going to be big trouble.
He killed him because he was doing the orders of Nebuchadnezzar?
No, he was not killing him because of Nebuchadnezzar. He was killing him because I think he wanted to take power himself. He was not an agent of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, now, that's one example. So here you have your first example of a person who should have instead of acting beyond the letter of the law, instead of acting with the Midas Chasidus, should have stopped and thought about the repercussions. V'abayis HaShenei, the second Beis HaMikdash, Kamu Charav Ayidei Chasidus Kazeh, Asher Nishka B'Mishkal Tzedek. Another example of going beyond the letter of the law that was not weighed out properly. B'mayis HaDavar Kamtza, right? The famous story, the Gemara Gittin, we learned it on Tisha B'Av, Kamtza Bar Kamtza, right? There was two people, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. A man had a friend Kamsa, an enemy Bar Kamsa. He invited Kamsa to his party. Bar Kamsa showed up. He humiliated Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa said, everybody that was there creating sages did nothing for this. I'm getting back at everyone. And he went to the Roman emperor and he said, they're rebelling against you. How do you know, said the emperor. He said, send them a sacrifice and you'll see whether they take it or not. He sends a sacrifice. Bar Kamsa takes the sacrifice, puts a blemish that makes it halachically disqualified from being a carbon, but that the Roman emperor would never understand that it's a problem. Okay, so they brought the carbon. The sages are there. The kahanim, the sages are there. They got to figure out, what do we do about this? So the first approach, the first thought was, you know what we should do? The first approach was, let's offer it. You know, this is a dangerous situation. We're in danger. Okay, let's offer the sacrifice. It's true, you're not allowed to offer a sacrifice that's blemished. But in this situation, it's really a danger. We should do it. The Gemara says that it was a sage there, Rav Schaya ben Avkilas. Schaya ben Avkilas said, no, you can't do that. Why? Because if we offer this sacrifice, somebody may see what's happening, not know the whole story, and say that you can bring a sacrifice even though it's blemished. Did he have to do that? Were you obligated to do that? You weren't obligated to do that. But again, he was a very pious individual. He said, you know, if we do this, this can cause people to do the wrong things. Okay. The other option was, all right, so you know what we got to do to this Bar Kamsa and his delegation? We got to get rid of them. We have no other choice. We got to kill them. And somehow or another cover it up and, you know, find some kind of a story. What happened to them? So again, there was Chaim of Kilas interjected and he said, you can't do that. Because somebody who, again, sees what's happening without holding the whole story, they'll see that this Jew, he put the blemish in the carbon, and they'll think, you know why he was killed? For putting a blemish in the sacrifice. So again, you can't kill him. So again, it was a Midas Chasidus on his part. You weren't obligated to do that, not obligated to be concerned for that. But in his mind, you know, we should go beyond the letter of the law, we should make sure that no one should ever make such a mistake, and Hashem will take care of the rest. That's my addition. I'm sure as Chaim ben Avkilas said, if we do what's right, we can put our trust in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, that everything will be okay. At the end of the day, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because since the sacrifice was not accepted, Bar Kamsa went back to the Roman Emperor. The Roman Emperor sent his legions, and that was the beginning of the end. And the Gemara says, that... the humility of Bescharia caused destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. You see, you can't just take an act of Chasidus and judge it as is. You got to look in all directions, on all sides. That a person's logic can see. In order to judge truthfully, what's better, Hasira Prisha, to do the act of Chasidus or to abstain? Two examples, okay? He just had two examples of where people acted b'midas Chasidus, acting on Chasidus on this pious act as it appears, as is, and they did not contemplate the repercussions of what would happen enough. Now, next example. Hine, ha-Torah tzipsa. Behold, the Torah commands. Ha-Yicheach, ta-Yicheach ha-Samisecha. You shall surely rebuke your friend. The problem is that a person will sometimes choose to rebuke someone with words. He will rebuke people, sinners, in a place or at a time that is not apropos for his words to be accepted. And because he rebuked them in the wrong way, they rebel even further. They decide to get back at his rebuke, and they do even worse. In this kind of situation, you know what the proper thing is? You know what Hashem wants from you? Hashem wants you lishtake. Hashem wants you to be quiet. Don't say anything then. This is what our sages say. The same way it's a mitzvah to say something that will be heard, that will be listened to. It's a mitzvah not to say what won't be heard. Okay? So here's the next example. This example is a mitzvah, right? Toichach is a rebuke, is a mitzvah. Now you're seeing somebody doing something wrong. The Torah says rebuke. So apparently, right, I have here in front of me the responsibility to rebuke. Okay? But rebuking a person is not like shaking a lulav, you know? I have to do this act. Rebuking a person is to get him back on the right path. And therefore, you have to calculate your rebuke and figure out, is this the right time? Is it the right place? But if your action is, oh, I got a rebuke, and you just rebuke, you could actually push the person even further away.
But this is not a very good going beyond the letter.
It's not, I tell you that. It's not going beyond the letter of the law. Yeah. But this is an example, again, of where you're taking face value and you're not, you're taking face value and you shouldn't be. Because, again, it's not like shaking a lulav, right? Yeah. It's not, I got to do the act. You have to, you're rebuking the person, put them on the right path. So you've got to judge, is this the right time to do it or not? Another example. And this is where it relates to the parasha. Behold, Pashadu Sheroi Lachal Adam Liyasmakdim Rasa Dvar Mitzvah. It is elementary. Everybody knows you're supposed to run to do a mitzvah. Ulishtadli Yasmina Iskimba. And if there's an opportunity to do a mitzvah, you're supposed to run to do it. Achene Lapa'amim Yachali Valabi Zemariva. But sometimes when you're running to do a mitzvah, when people are running to do a mitzvah, what comes out of that? A fight. And now with the fighting that comes out of it, you have a greater desecration of Hashem's name than an honor to Hashem. In this situation, in that circumstance, the chassid has to abstain. He has to abandon the mitzvah and not do it. And this is what the sages said regarding the Leviim, what we started off with. And he quotes the Medrash. They all knew that whoever carries the Aron gets a lot of reward. So they abandon everything else. Everybody's running to the Aron to get the reward. Right? That the example of the Leviim. The Leviim were all fighting over the Aron, leaving everything else. And what did that cause? Inappropriate behavior in front of the Aron and their death.
So they took the second interpretation.
Yes. He's using the second interpretation for his example. But I have a question on this. Okay? The Mesilas Yesharim is using this as an example of people running to do a mitzvah. We all know it's appropriate to run to do a mitzvah, but it can be a time that when you run to do a mitzvah, if that's going to cause a fight, hold back. Right. Why were the Leviim running to the Ark, according to the Medrash? The Medrash says, V'kulan ratzin la'aren lital sachar. They all ran to the Ark because they all knew the greatest reward lies in carrying the Ark. So that's what it says in the Medrash. So that's not running to do a mitzvah because of even seemingly even outward appearance of midas chasidus. It seems they're doing it because of personal motive. So I believe what the Masalas Yesharim understood was that we should not understand the Medrash that they're running for the reward, but rather knowing that the ark carries the greatest reward means that which is the most important article to carry, which is the greatest mitzvah to do, to carry the ark. Proof being that the reward for the, carrying the ark, carrying the arin, is greater than all the other things. So when the Medrash says they're running there to, for the reward of the ark, because to get the reward, it doesn't mean, according to Masechta Yesharim, they're running for the reward. But they're running with the understanding that the greatest reward comes from carrying the ark. They understand it's the greatest mitzvah, and they're all running to do the biggest mitzvah. But the result of that was fighting and quarreling, and it caused their death. In that situation, that's the proof that in a situation, if running to a mitzvah is going to cause a fight, then don't run to do the mitzvah. That's where midas chasidus, that's where wanting to do the will of Hashem says, don't do the mitzvah. Don't do what seems that you need to do. Now, let me switch. This is very, very important. Hine, chayev ha'adam lishmar kala mitzvahs b'chol dikdukayim lefnei mi sheyiev l'yir v'l'yevish. A person obligated to do a mitzvah in all its details and never be afraid or embarrassed from anyone that he's doing it in front of. I spoke about your laws in front of kings and I wasn't embarrassed. If it was time to learn, it was time to learn, wherever he was. We learn, be strong, be brazen like a leopard, meaning to be brazen like a leopard for what purpose? Says the Pirkei Avos, do the will of Hashem. Amnam, gam bazeh tzarech chiluk v'avchana. In regard to this also, you have to know when and what to do. He calls a nemra al gufei ha-mitzvah shechayavim anachto behem chayva gemura. The idea of never being embarrassed through a mitzvah is a rule regarding the essential mitzvah. And its details. Shebehem yaseh panav kachalamish. You put your face like a rock and you're not afraid of anyone. But sometimes there are additional pious things, meaning there are things beyond the letter of the law that you want to do. That if you do it in front of people, they're going to laugh at you. And for laughing at the fact that you want to do something right, that causes them to be sinners, and they're punished through you. And he didn't have to do these things because they're not an absolute obligation. When it comes to this, better then for the pious person not to do that pious thing that he would typically do than to do it. Walk silently with Hashem. Meaning you don't have to always show your level of piety. Many great pious individuals, they didn't do their acts of piety in front of the common people because of this problem. This is the rule. Anything that is primary, mandatory of the mitzvah, doing it in front of anybody who's laughing at you. But if it's not essential, and it can bring about that people make fun, lo yaseyu, don't do it. Nimtzes Lamed, this teaches us, shabal is chasid chasidus amiti, a person who wants to really reach the love of chasidus properly, tzarech sheyishkol kol ma'aseh lefi atoilados hanemshaches behem. He's got to weigh out what are the repercussions that come out of the actions. And according to the situation, time and place, that is how you decide what to do and what not to do. And Moses Hashem says, there's too many examples, too many details to go through, too many examples to go through every kind of situation. But rather, a person has to use their seichel and common sense to know when to buy the chasidus and when not. But the rule is that just because something at first impression seems the right thing to do, the proper thing is to stop, contemplate, and realize what are the repercussions. If it's something I'm obligated to do, I got to do it. You don't make calculations then. What are the repercussions then? I got to do it. I have a mitzvah to do. But if we're not talking about a mitzvah, we're talking about something beyond the letter of the law, or we're talking about a situation where it should be self-understood that here the mitzvah doesn't apply, and there too you have an opportunity for an actual mitzvah. But if you stop and you think about the mitzvah, the act, and you think about the repercussions, that can make you understand that there is no mitzvah here, like an example of rebuke. Let me conclude with a story. Famous story of Yisrael Salanter. Yisrael Salanter had a student, wealthy student, who invited him to spend Shabbos with him. So Yisrael Salanter said to him, well, tell me about your Shabbos table. What do you do at your Shabbos table? So he says, the food is the highest level of kashrus. We sing Zmiris. We share Divrei Torah. We learn Shulchan Aruch at the table. The meal goes for a long time. And again, everything in the kitchen is taken care of properly. The cook there is a widow of a Talmud Chacham, and everything is on the highest standard. So Rishon Salanter said to him, fine, I will go to you for Shabbos on one condition. The meal has to be done in 2 hours. That means we're just going to move through everything. The student had no choice. Rishon came for Shabbos. They moved through everything on Shabbos. The meal was done much earlier than usual. And the student said to him, Rebbe, can you just tell me, what am I doing wrong that you told me that you wanted to rush through the meal? So the way I heard the story, is Rabbi Yisrael asked for the widow to come out from the kitchen, the person, the cook. And he sat there, Rebbe said, I'm so sorry for rushing you. And she said, sorry? Usually I'm falling off my feet. Now I have a chance to go home early and get some sleep. Yisrael said to him, it's very important to have a beautiful Shabbos table, but not at the expense of a widow.